some real music.
I couldn't believe you could go downhill from the Beatles, but you did. And for someone
else, but not for me. Davy Jones and the Monkees. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed.
Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace.
Are you going to do a concert or are we going to do a radio show?
This is one of the greatest songs ever written. I'm a believer. Okay, why do we start the show with songs like that? Now, this is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. That's Chuck King, who doesn't really appreciate the music of the Monkees. What's the problem with you, Chuck?
When you get some good music, country music, then we'll be in the chips.
Chuck is a country music aficionado, and he's written a song called It's Hard to Kiss the Lips at Night That Chewed You Out All Day. You like that? We make it up as we go. What's this show about? It's not about the Monkees, but today we do have a guest named Davy Jones, and he has nothing to do with the Monkees, but we had to lead in with that song. So thank you, Neil Diamond. Thank you, Lori Lynn. Thank you, Mark Clibby. And Dave Jones, welcome to our program.
You know, that's why we had to do the Monkees, because Lori, our producer, likes the Monkees.
Expert, yes. Dave, glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Do you go by Dave or Davey?
When I was in elementary school, I actually went by Davey, and that changed about fifth or sixth grade.
Well.
But I was definitely right in the center of the Monkees time.
You were?
Yeah, I was.
You were famous.
I was famous.
That's so since cool. You were telling us about grade school, tell us about your life. Where'd you go to grade school?
Well, I actually grew up here in Denver and in the Wheat Ridge Golden area. Went to Wheat Ridge High School.
Wait a minute. Harvey Moore?
Don't know the name.
Yeah. I'm old.
Yeah.
He was a tough coach at Wheat Ridge.
Okay.
I think Dave Logan played for Harvey.
Rick Coates was the coach.
He was?
Yeah, Dave Logan was actually, two great. He was a senior when I came in as a sophomore.
Maybe I'm all mixed up.
So.
Go ahead, Chuck. It's a good lead-in for you.
No, you went to school in Wheat Ridge. At that point in time, Wheat Ridge was probably a city completely separate from Denver.
Yeah, it really was at that point.
Kind of a little country town.
Yeah, now you're calling it like the inner suburbs of Denver.
Right.
But, back then it was definitely part of the suburbs and... actually, when my mom passed away, last year, but a good friend of hers, we went to her funeral with my mom, and so they were doing the funeral and just talking a little bit about her, and found out that Wheat Ridge is really an old neighborhood, and she had graduated from Wheat Ridge in 1932, It just sort of struck me just how old Wheat Ridge is.
But. Yeah.
So, what point there in your background did you come to a relationship with Christ?
So grew up in a home where we really didn't go to church other than on Christmas Eve. And I had a good friend, Mike Murphy, just this Irish Catholic family, and go and hang out with him and his family all the time. And there was a man in the city, his name is Father Leone, I don't know if you ever heard his name. And he was sort of a renegade priest at the time, just hung out with kids. Didn't make a difference if you were Catholic or not.
I think he was a friend of Don Reber's, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he just spent time with Mike and myself, and just a real godly man. Take us out. We go play handball. We go to McDonald's. Just all the things, just spending time with kids. And so I just saw just something that I knew. There was something different. I just wanted whatever that was. And over a period of a couple of years, I ended up going, my senior in high school, went to a Catholic retreat, and I'd still never even been inside of a Catholic church, but I was up on a Catholic retreat, and at that point, it was like God just had me, and I wasn't a person that cried much, and for 2 days straight, I just wept. God just broke through into my life, and from that point, never doubted my faith and God's goodness.
So his style and his patience in just befriending you for 2 years... just the right dose for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like God knew. I was also going to Young Life. You guys know the name Chuck Cook?
Oh, yeah, so, great guy.
Yeah, so Chuck was the young life leader at Wheat Ridge at that time. And so I would hear the gospel and hear about Jesus. And, you know, of course, his young life, they just teach a lot about what Jesus, you know, his life and his words. And so I really was listening and gaining a lot from going to those meetings. But I was also, I was just a kid that was pretty aloof, pretty careful with adults and kept a distance. And so Chuck, I think he just saw me as somebody you just stay away from. But I was still showing up to Young Life. But it really took this Catholic priest who was just befriending me the way he did to really, you know, for God to break through into my life.
And the whole Young Life scene for me was the first time the gospel ever made sense with Don Reavers, Chuck Cook type guys, because it was... It made it fun, made it friendly, kid-friendly, and earning the right to be heard, their kind of motto was helpful to me. Nothing forced. You know, I had to ask Don, what do you do anyway?
Yeah.
Besides come to practice and watch us. He told me what YL was. And so thank goodness for Chuck Cook and Don Reavers and Dick Schultz and all those leaders, Tom Melton.
Yeah. I remember going to camps, and each one of those names you bring up are speaking at different times.
Well, I'm trying to think of one guy that was so funny. I'll pull it up in a minute. Those guys were great.
So you graduated high school, and then what?
Well, then went off to Fort Collins to the CSU and was majoring in civil engineering. I was just good at math and... Went up there, and that was just sort of what I was doing, not really knowing for sure what I wanted to do. And then it was interesting. You know, again, for the most part, my life was pretty carefree. I was just a real free spirit, very adventurous. You know, my parents were pretty much done parenting by the time I was about 12, you know, so I was just a free spirit, you know, on the street, going wherever I wanted to go. But then I reached toward the end of college, and my life just came crashing down, and I just had really never dealt with a lot of the things that had gone on in my life, and so I just really hit bottom. And so through that time, I finished school, but I also realized it's like I just want to serve God in more of a direct way. So I never really got into the engineering, and then went straight to work for a group home for troubled teens, and then. And then after that, and that was down in College Springs, and then moved back to Denver to be the chaplain up at Lookout Mountain School, the lockup for juveniles. And that's where I met my wife, Gina. And, you know, from that point on, I actually, my story is interesting. It's sort of back and forth, just how God outlined it, but a mix of ministry. And then I actually did end up back up in consulting engineering, doing water rights consulting for a period of time. But the whole time, the 30 years that, even before I met my wife, but 30 years with my wife and us being involved in urban inner city ministry.
So this is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell, your host. Chuck King's my co-host again today. And our special guest is Dave Jones. And tell us about Gina. I mean, you laid eyes on her. You fell in love immediately. How long did it take for her to come around?
Well, it depends on who's speaking. So I'm the one speaking today, so I get to tell my side of the story that she had her eyes all over me from the very beginning.
So I was wrong.
No, she's actually in studio and she's shaking her head.
Yeah, no, it's funny because anybody you talk to, so Gina was working at Youth for Christ, Denver Youth for Christ, and then I moved back to Denver to be the chaplain up at Lookout Mountain School. It's like I spotted her and I'm like, hey, I think I'm interested in that woman. And so as I talked to even people who remember back on that time, they'd say I kept hanging out by the front desk. That's where she was at, the front desk. And so, I mean, I'd find reasons to, you know, I'd run out of staples really quick, you know, maybe two at a time to get back to the desk so I could go visit with her again. And so really pretty quickly, we both just started hanging out and spending time together. And
did you ever notice that you were much whiter than she is?
You know, after a while, it sort of struck me. Let's see. She's African American, and I'm white. Yeah, I was. It was an interesting thing. We've both have talked about this, but you know, I just grew up in a family where my mom and dad had just no prejudice at all, and so I just was that way. Even back to high school, I just had a very diverse group of friends. You know, even though Wheat Ridge is primarily white, I still had a real diversity of friends, and so.
So you didn't notice. All you knew was, hey, I just this gal is for me.
Yeah, honestly, it was like, she is pretty, and I'm going to talk with her.
Has it ever been a problem?
You know, really, for the most part, we've had very little issues. You know, I mean, 30 years ago, it was very unusual to have a white man with a black woman. You know, it was 10 of the other, you know, black men with white women, but it was very unusual to have a white man with a black woman. So it was unusual, but in Denver, it really has never really been much of an issue. We can hardly even think. I mean, I don't know. Can't even think of really an instance that's even on my mind where I look back that there was even any pain involved with some kind of prejudice or whatever.
Good.
So when did you get involved? I'm sorry.
No, Chuck. You go right ahead.
You go. You want to sing some more, Bob? when did you get involved with Denver leadership?
So this goes back. I was with Here's Life Inner City for about 10 years, and then left that. Gina and I left that ministry. That was here in Denver. And then a pastor in town, Micah Espinosa, with the Praise Center, we had been building a relationship for a few years, and then he came approached me and a few other men that we had been together doing this thing called a learning community, which is spending a year together reading books, having meals together, and just sharing life together. So sort of that was the background of us spending time together, this group of pastors and myself. And then Micah came and approached me about this. There wasn't even a title for it, but it was just saying something to bring together leaders in our city, to bring them together in unity, to bring them together like how we had been getting together, coming together, sharing openly, honestly, taking your pastor's hat off or your ministry leader's hat off, and really just like I said, just sharing in a safe environment. So that's what got birthed out of. So that was like 4.5 years ago we began to meet about it. And this is something that God really put on the heart of Micah. And even though Micah currently isn't involved in the leadership, he just went full-time with his own church. But God really used him to set this off. And so eventually came up with the name. We started it now. This next year we'll be on our third year of it. It's a 12-month program for ministry. It came out of primarily urban youth workers, but it's really open for all ministry leaders in the city.
So what's its purpose?
Well, you know, we came up with this one tagline that has been so helpful. It's like building healthy leaders. And I remember even when we had this discussion about do we want to use the term build or to train ministry leaders in the city, and we decided against that and went with building healthy leaders, just to get people involved in it. And when they would come in, they would know that it's not going to be just up here in your head, but it's going to be as much about your heart. So that's why we chose that term, healthy leader. So really, that has kept us on track, saying building healthy leaders. So anything we do, we always come back to that. Okay, one, even us as a leadership team, so as a group of leaders, Phila Beta, Saltwall, Scott Sangster, Ellen Barton, are all make up the leadership team. And we have to look at ourselves and saying, are we healthy personally? And then are we operating together in a healthy way ourselves? So that little phrase, building healthy leaders, has really been great guidance for us.
So interesting that you now work in an urban setting most of the time or all the time?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And 30 years ago, you fall in love with Lieutenant Dish over here, a beautiful African-American. So has that helped you? Because I will tell you, since 1985 in seminary, when Luis Villarreal, Bob Woolfolk, and Ken Roberts, and Jack LaPietra, Dennis Noble, tried to flunk me out of seminary. But instead, they said they gave me a C only because they liked me. They started teaching us in the suburbs about how the city worked. And I confess, I still don't get it. I don't think we'll ever understand the troubles facing folks from some of those real tough tough neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods. But does being married to Gina help you have an instant understanding, feeling, mm-hmm. empathy, acceptance of the cultures you're dealing with there in the city?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's been true. I would say that I really, you know, we have three sons. I mean, I'm like, I've got a black family, you know.
Do your sons look black?
Yeah, they look black.
Why is that, by the way? Why you got?
Yeah,
they just overpower us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true though, isn't it? Like, what's that guy? What's the guard that plays next to Steph Curry's name?
Thompson.
Yeah. But do both of them have black dads
fathers,
and
black fathers?
Okay.
Yep.
White moms.
Yep.
But the child normally looks black.
Yeah. So our sons, yeah, I mean, they definitely, you know, grew up in a black neighborhood, went black school, looked black. I mean, they, you know, but they understand. It's really interesting. I mean, and they will say, you know, they're black and they're white. And they really have been around, they've been around so much culture in their life. They really understand in some special ways the white culture, the black culture, in ways that none of us can, you know. And I would just say for myself, going back to the question about just being married to Gina, it obviously it's helped me a lot over the years to be, just to be in the black community, married to a black woman, learning like I have. But at the same time, I've really been careful always just to say that I, you know, of course I don't know what it means to be African American. I mean, I can be as close to it as I am, but I would still never use that phrase that I understand. What it's like to be black. Well, I don't.
By the way, you look way out of it in this picture here, your beautiful family.
Yeah.
But I grew up, my dad was a famous player for the Cleveland Indians, and he's the only Major League Baseball player that played with both Larry Doby, who was the first African American in the American League, and Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier in 47.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. So I remember this picture in my home of Doby and Luke Easter, another African American, and my dad in the middle. And I think Luke Easter signed it, "What are you doing in here, white boy?" So as a little kid, standing there looking at that picture, thinking, now, were these guys having problems or is this guy just having fun? But it is interesting because we did an inner city camp with Rich Beach and all those pastors for years, and we would still every year learn something that seemed to be so simple that we should have known years before. Mm. Like our kids would get off the buses. These pastors would
part
bring
of those kids were our kids because our three sons went to the
Sky's the Limit
years ago.
Really?
20 years ago.
Well, the kids would get off the bus and we figured out they're starving. So we go to bed after dinner with all kinds of snacks and junk food and they wake up coming to camp hungry and exhausted the first 3 hours because they needed graham crackers and juice or something from us. But again, I guess I'm just saying simple things like that. I was thinking, how many years am I going to wake up in intellectual mm-hmm. poverty here, not figuring out what's going on? Even like the pastor saying, we like our culture. We don't need you white guys coming down here and trying mm-hmm. to think you're throwing us something from the suburbs. We like what we do here. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that God gave you this family and planted you in this spot. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, you know, apart from even the race thing, obviously just to be blessed with 30 years of marriage, have three sons who, you know, we've been through our times, you know, over the years, but by God's grace, I mean, our sons know the Lord, and our oldest, who was really our prodigal son, has just come back to the Lord in some tremendous ways. And so, yeah, just blessed in that way.
Point blank question. She ever called you a dumb white boy?
No, I don't think she's ever quite used those words, but close.
You know, she looks like she might be ready to.
You know, yeah. One of the reasons I was attracted to Gina was that, I mean, she had a lot of fun, but she was also just could be tough and say things point blank in ways and somehow be able to get away with it and not offend people. You know, she's always been that way.
That's the way Chuck is.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's been doing that to me for years, and I just put up with it. So day in and day out, tell us what your ministry looks like, because this is exciting stuff.
Well, so like I said, you know, I lead two programs. One is Gina and I, and she works with me part-time, and it's called Team. And it's taking leadership teams through a roughly an eight-month process of helping ministry leadership teams. This is primarily focused on urban inner-city ministries or churches. So like the first time we did it was Denver Rescue Mission and Open Door Ministries. But helping them in the busyness of what they're doing, which, you know, when you're in that urban environment, you're always dealing with crisis and trauma. I mean, you know, just you're living in that a lot. You know, you normally are anyway in a church environment dealing with that as a pastor, but double that when you're in the urban environment. So when you're in that environment, it is you just need to be able to have that help of somebody saying, step back. Do you have your ladder against the right building? You know, you're busy climbing, painting, doing whatever your work is on that building, but are you really against the right building? Is this what God wants you to be doing? I mean, is this what he's called you to? That kind of thing, helping them to really focus on, are they caring for themselves well, and are they caring for their teams well in the midst of their mission, which is usually other people? So, you know, trying to get leadership teams to step back and go, are you really being able to focus the amount of time on your own team? So a lot of basics in leadership that a lot of leaders already know, but you're able, you know, part of the Team program is helping them to carve out time to focus on those issues and just to lead well. So that's the Team program. And then DLI, or Denver Leadership Initiative, again, is this group of pastors and Ellen Barton, who works with Open Door Fellowship, and then Scott Sangster, a pastor with Living Hope Baptist, Phil Abeda with His Love Fellowship, and then Salt Wall, who's a pastor at Embassy Church. So all of us come together, and we make up the board, and we do this 12-month Denver Leadership Program. And we meet once a month with 40 leaders. We break up into small groups of about, you know, eight people. And in that group, you're helping them to deal with issues like, do they have the accountability in their life that would be healthy for them to have? How is the balance in their life? Are they going way too much and maybe ignoring their spouse or their kids or even themselves at times? So those are the kind of issues. So you can tell you're talking about building healthy leaders. I mean, everything points back to that issue of building healthy leaders and creating an environment of saying, this is the time to be open and vulnerable and just be real with where you're at.
It's so important, because a special challenge for inner city ministers is the fact that they pour their lives into people who so often fail them. And after a while, it's tough not to focus on the failures and to focus on those things where you're making a difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point. Yeah, you have got to get used to lots of just what you're saying, what would feel like defeat. You know, in time you start to see, you know, God is faithful and you know, he doesn't waste relationships and efforts. But at times you can get pretty discouraged and defeated.
So I applaud you and Gina and God for the brilliance of putting you in the position you're in and the leadership you're providing to other leaders to, as you say here, improve their serve. And how can people get in touch with you if you need financial support or help in any other way? How can they find you?
Well, you know, and I do want to say this, that when I mentioned Denver Leadership Initiative, I just want to explain that we really, our goal is, in terms of the target of who that's for, it's not just the urban inner city leader. That's primary, you know, that's sort of, this came, got birthed out of that and everybody that's been involved in that. But we're like, we don't want it to be exclusively urban inner city leaders. You know, we want to have some diversity racially, but also even from the background of where people are coming from, and also lay leaders and paid leaders as well. So maybe there's somebody listening and saying, hey, I'd be interested in finding out more about this program. And so, you know, the website for Denver Leadership Initiative is denverlead.org. lead.org, L-E-A-D, denverlead.org. And there's more information on that website about what we're doing. And there's some contact information there. And of course, you know, who's going to ask about financial, you know, open the door for that and then not say something about that? Of course, if there is somebody that really has a heart for leaders and building into leaders, which I know that there is, that this would be a very practical way to build into leaders who then obviously are building into others. So it is a different way of investing, but really a great way of investing in our city.
And they contact you?
Yeah, they can, you know, you can contact me at Dave.Jones at Global Associates.
Dave.Jones at Global Associates. Somebody listening needs to send $1,000. Somebody else maybe $2,500. Somebody a $5,000 check. Because as Dave just said, you keep doing what you're doing. Excel in the business where God's planted you. But look what multiplies here if you invest in what Dave and Gene are doing and allow them to invest like they are in leaders that will just continue to build their own organizations, and one thing leads to another. Good way to stretch the dollar bill. Good leverage. And congratulations to both of you on where God's placed you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been a good guest.
And I want to mention that on the end of that, Global Associates is an org.
Oh, keep going. Org. Don't interrupt you. So it's what again?
Yeah, Dave.Jones at Global Associates, plural, .org. Yeah, thank you guys for having me here, and it's been nice talking with you.
Also, on your website at denverlead.org, there's a donation button that you can click and make a donation there.
Absolutely.
Chuck, you're a great co-host and a dear friend.
Oh, you hurt my feelings when you said that I was mean to you.
Well, forgive me, and I'll try to forget that you are. Thanks for listening to the program. We'll see you next week on You Get the Blessing. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I